Welcome to Ryan Rants and Raves, a podcast series by the Quebec Government Office in New York. Bienvenue à Ryan Rants and Raves, une série de podcasts par le gouvernement du Québec à New York.
Hello everyone, welcome to Ryan's Rants and Raves. Today's subject is very interesting because it's one that is probably one of the most pertinent, I would say, in the industry. It's about resell, and I'm with an expert in resell and one of the first, I would say, is probably the first mover in resell. So I'm with Fred Manella. Fred, who's a founder of Two Authenticators. Fred, thanks again for taking the time to be with me today.
Hey, Ryan, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for inviting.
And tell me a bit about yourself and I guess, you know, how you got into the resale market, because I think you got into it when people thought, why would they buy like a vintage bag? You know, like they're like, ew, it's used. But now people really want to have something that is vintage.
Yeah, well, so I'll start off to tell you a little bit about myself. So my name is Fred Manella. I'm a co-founder at Two Authenticators. We're a company that specializes in vintage luxury handbags, like you mentioned, the big brands, Louis Vuitton, Chanel, Hermes. And I have been in this industry for, you know, a little bit over 15 years now, getting close to 20 years. And to your point, it's been an absolute pleasure to be involved in the industry in the early days because it has grown tremendously. It is just so different today than what it was 10, 15 years ago. And when I first started, to your point, an industry that for a lot of people, it was something that was very secondary in their minds. You know, it wasn't part of the culture or essentially how we shopped or how we bought goods. It wasn't something that came front of mind, right? We just kind of put it aside and we said, yeah, it kind of exists, but it's probably scattered and disorganized industry with these mom and pops and maybe a couple places online, these marketplaces that were selling these goods. And so it just was not organized. And it was worth probably at that point, call it, you know, 2010, 11, an industry in luxury that was worth, you know, $4 or $5 billion in North America. And slowly but surely now in 2022, so 10, 12 years later, it's an industry that's worth, call it $35 billion today. And it's growing. And yeah, there's probably, you know, a lot of reasons for that. And I'm sure that we can talk about this for a very long time. But it's something that, you know, I feel very proud that I've been involved since the early days, I would say.
And when they said, I think I read McKinsey says it's going to be worth $100 billion by 2030. So I think it is really only growing.
Definitely. And McKinsey is good. They do. They come out with a report. There's a lot of different numbers out there, but I think that number makes sense.
Why do you think it's more popular now than it was prior? Is it because people are more interested in sustainability, or do they see the value? Because some, let's say that, you know, a woman who collects like Birkins and then she like decides to clear it out and she's only touched it. But if she only touched it once, you know, you could sell it per, you know, half the price and get the same value, perhaps.
Totally. That definitely exists. That's part of the industry today. It's people that are buying these extremely extraordinarily rare items that essentially just will wear them maybe once or twice or simply not wear them and then resell them. So I would say that exists. It's a small part of the reason why resale has grown so much. Probably, you know, my heart tells me that it's just what makes the most sense financially first and foremost, right? The main reason why people buy goods pre-owned, whether it's a luxury good or not, is just because of the financial factor, right? It just makes sense that we're more careful about how we spend our money, and everybody loves a deal. And so when you get to buy a deal, you just feel really good about it. So I think there is an instant gratification in the fact that you got that deal, right? So people love that. They love that they saved money, and everybody loves these brands. There's nobody out there that's going to say, never dreamt one day of owning a Louis Vuitton purse or a Chanel is my dream. And so people love the brands, and the brands have done an incredible job at creating this loyalty with their customers. And so, you know, the secondary market really rides the waves of great success from these brands. Now, you know, we have to kind of remind ourselves as well that Louis Vuitton in the 1990s was essentially a bankrupt company. And then the Arnault family kind of brought together these conglomerates and put together these brands and invested in them massively. And stroke of genius brought Marc Jacobs in the early days with the first, I don't know if you remember the first Stephen Sprouse collection that he had the graffiti on the bags. All that stuff. And then he brought the Murakami collection with the multicolor prints and the early 2000s. That is really what put these brands on the map. And it wasn't always the case that these brands were hot and the talk of the town as much as it is today, right? So they've done an incredible job at the primary market. And so what happens is that then in the secondary market, it has an impact. Obviously, if there's 250 billion euros of luxury goods sold every single year, you can imagine how much product ends up on the secondary market. Yeah. And so it's just logical that there's so much product out there, then people are like, wait a second, I can take my bag and either I can sell it to a professional reseller such as myself, or I can sell it by myself because I feel like it on Facebook Marketplace. Maybe I find success there. So there's so many avenues for the end consumer. And that's really what matters, is at the end of the day, that they have options to monetize these goods. And so for sure, number one reason, financial reason.
Well, you might, the person who's selling it is a good financial reason for them, because it's an investment that, you know, will grow. So, you know, especially if it's only gently worn. But I do have the question is, so how do you authenticate it? Because, you know, in New York and Chinatown, you see the fake. So what are the best ways to assure that it is authenticated and it is a true Louis Vuitton or a true Hermès bag?
That is the most important part of any resale business out there, is really the ability to authenticate the items as the fakes are getting better and better. And they really are. And even to some extent, the brands are making it harder for us to authenticate, because for quite a few brands like Louis Vuitton or Chanel, since 2020, 2021, now they kind of stopped doing the date stamps. You know, the date codes are not really there anymore. They put microchips in their bags. So, you know, there's only an app that exists in the store that you can kind of scan to know where the chip is, and then give that, you know, populates on the information so that they know, you know, the ins and outs of the bags and the provenance of the bag completely. And but that, it makes it a little bit harder for us, because one of the easier ways to kind of figure out authenticity was the date code. And so it has become a harder science and a harder art, science and art, for us to authenticate. But luckily, as the brands become more sophisticated in their technologies for authenticity, we in the secondary market also become more sophisticated. And so there's a lot of great technology, mainly artificial intelligence, that helps us in our tasks of making sure that the bags are authentic. So there's kind of like four or five steps to the whole thing, right? You need to have some human interaction, but the first step is to making sure that you're buying from reliable sources of professional wholesalers or distributors or auction houses, or however you're buying your product, you know, that there is trust with those, with that supply chain. And then as the product comes in, then it needs to go through a human eye and a human touch to look at, you know, all the elements that you can imagine, whether it's stitching, lining, stamping, color, smell, anything you can think of needs to be analyzed by a human. And then the last step to the whole process is to take this technology and to confirm your human assessment that the bag is authentic or not, right? And so this technology goes in, takes multiple images, like almost at the microscopic level, sends it back to a database, analyzes it against thousands of other images of fakes and reals, and kind of, you know, gives you confidence at a 99.7% security that the bag is authentic, right? So you don't always use that technology for every single unit, because a lot of the bags, again, that were made in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, I mean, we've bought hundreds of thousands of them over the years. Your eye becomes really quite good at it. And they really didn't fake bags in the 80s as much as they do today. And so you kind of know what are the items that have been faked, especially in the early 2000s and beyond, and the bags that have not been faked a lot, right? So you kind of get that sense. And so that helps quite a bit. And the technology just comes in and reinforces all of this.
Well, it seems like it's an art to authenticate, because you'd have to have like the experience like yourself. If I tried to authenticate a bag tomorrow, I could say, oh, it doesn't smell like leather. I mean, there'd be no way. I mean, I can only imagine how you could actually recruit someone. You can't post on LinkedIn, I need an authenticator to come work for me.
You're right that from that perspective, it's an art. And, I've been doing this for, 15 plus years. And so I've kept my database of what I've been buying over the years. And so I've trained tens of buyers over my career, authenticators, buyers. I myself am still one today. I still do quite a bit of that role in my day-to-day tasks. I'm still involved. Just this morning, we received a shipment from one of our great suppliers overseas. And I go through 157 units. And there's one product there, no good. So what I did is, and it happens. I mean, I'm not going to say that it doesn't happen. It's not. That's why we have a process in place, right? So yeah. The product comes in. It's a dyno tote. Already touched the leather, touched the lining. Is this the pseudo? Does it feel quite cottony? You look, the stamping, the hardware is too shiny. The leather doesn't feel quite right. What do? You take your technology, put it on the bag. Look at what happens. 30 seconds later, the bag is fake.
Wow. And what do you do when you have the fake bag? Do you throw it away? Like, do you send it back to them? Like, what's the...
Yeah, you just... Some suppliers will be like, burn it. And some suppliers is like, what are you talking about? Send it back to me. I'm like, okay, I'll send it back to you. I don't, like, what difference does it make to me? But like, and that you build also relationship with the suppliers to make sure that, again, the trust is there. But we will never, there's not a single bag that's going to pass through our fingers that has not been seen by myself, the technology, or any of my authenticators, yeah. Right? So it's a good system, and it's been working for me for the past 15 years.
Yeah, which is great. And that's why you're here. So yeah. I do want to chat about, so do you have any great finds that you experienced 3 or 15 years that you want to share, like your favorite find that you found and moved or something like that, or maybe that you've kept for yourself?
Well, that I've kept for myself. So I have a nice bag collection. It's always funny because, I love bags. It's always a really funny thing to say, but I always get really excited. And these days they make these bags, these tiny everything. It's kind of gone now. I don't know, like the trend now is we're going back to hobos and we're going back to bigger bags, right? But like go back like 6, 8, 9 months ago, it was everybody wanted tiny, tiny bags. And so I just find them so cute when I see like a really small bag come in. Like this morning I saw a little Givenchy Antigona. It's the one that has this weird shape, but you remember that one? It was so popular, but it was the baby. It was like tiny, tiny. We're on a podcast, so I can't really show you physically, but it was the tiniest thing. And then with the strap, and so I just kind of always get excited when I see those items. They're always really cute. But on a personal level, I love Hermes scarves. And what I've been doing over the years is I've been collecting. There is one line. There's one collection called the Passage à Paris. And that is a stamp. It's a stamp of Paris, of the streets of Paris, that is stamped on the scarf. And then you have like a stamp, like you would see on an envelope, like a stamp on top of that print of the city. And that's the scarf. And they made them. Though that collection is very rare, and they made it in 4 or 5 different colors, and I've been trying to find those colors, and then I frame them, and then beautiful frame, and I put them in my house, and so that's always been really nice. And so I have them. I have now 4 colors, but I believe I'm just missing one, and it's the green. It's this olive green, but I have it in blue. I have it in orange. I have it in red. So I like that. But I have bought some very unique items. I mean, name it, crocodile Birkin with diamonds on their hardware for $250,000. There is, and I will remember this for the rest of my life. And this happened when I, in my old business, I had a store in Beverly Hills on, now I forget the street.
Name's escaping you.
In any event, I, So, you know, you're in this neighborhood and it's phenomenal. And, you know, the clientele is just so extravagant. And I remember an older lady that came in, and she had a Hermes Kelly for sale. And it was a Hermes Kelly that I had never seen before. And it was a size 25. And in those days, like, I'm going back 7-8 years ago, the smaller size Birkins and Kellys were not so popular. People wanted the 35s. Mm-hmm. They wanted the Kelly 28s. They wanted the Kelly 32. They wanted the bigger size. Today, everybody wants the small size. So Kelly 25 at that time, it didn't yield so much money for the customer. But it was a 25 with the gunmetal hardware, which was already kind of like only the So Black limited edition had it at that time. It was really rare. And it was the front of the Kelly had feathers. It was all black and it was just feathers, feathers from I don't know what kind of bird, but it was feathered all the way up, down. And then I said, wow, this is really unique. And then I started researching. And so it was a model that they had made only for the vitrine, only for the window, for the store in Saint-Honoré.
Wow.
It was one in the world.
That's very unique. That's insane.
And I got to buy that bag, and it was very, very unique.
And much more valuable. One in the world.
One in the world. And I ended up selling it. Maybe I should have kept it. But yeah, that was quite the find.
Wow. I wonder how she obtained that. Maybe she just liked it in the window and purchased it.
It's possible.
Yeah, that must have been how it happened. Now, we do need to chat about, you know, good old Quebec, you know.
Yeah.
Right, your Quebecois. Do you have anything to say about Montreal or the good old province of Quebec? To please my employer, well, I shouldn't say it like that, but so that Quebec is happy with me.
No, of course, I've traveled around the world. I've lived in many different countries. I've seen how luxury translates itself and translates borders, and how luxury is perceived in different parts of the world. And we see luxury here in Quebec and in Montreal in a very different way. But what I would say about Montreal, and what strikes me, and I think people kind of forget this a little bit, is that we have a really robust e-commerce industry here. Yeah. In Quebec. And I think we kind of forget that, like, brands like Essence, Fort9 were born here, right? These are like top of the line, extremely sophisticated e-commerce platforms that sell internationally. That are very large in the hundreds of millions and in the billions. And so the expertise for people here in terms of taking photography, whether you're taking pictures for e-commerce, whether you're analyzing data for e-commerce, whether you're running an e-commerce, we have quite an interesting expertise here. And I think we forget that. And then on the secondary market, we have a brand that now has raised some money from the Caisse de Dépôt, Laps, that owns Golf Avenue and Cycling Avenue, pre-owned golf goods, pre-owned cycling goods. Again, that expertise in pre-owned and the ability to sell single SKUs, right? This is what's hard in pre-owned, is that every SKU is unique. And so yeah, this ability to do that in a profitable way, we have that expertise here. And I count myself in that in the pre-owned industry. And so I think we're in a good place. And I think to your employer, more investments in e-commerce, more investments in pre-owned. Quebec really cares about the environment and cares about this circular economy. And so I think it makes sense for Quebec to kind of, already that the expertise exists, let's continue investing.
Yeah, no, and make it full circle. I mean, you know, they have great hydropower, so that which is green, so they should also invest in the companies that are green and putting less of a carbon footprint out there.
Yeah.
I forgot about the pre-owned company that does pre-owned biking, but that makes sense because, you know, bikers, you know, they're very bougie about their gear. So I could see why that works very well. Same with golf. And just to close, Fred, so do you have any advice to any other entrepreneurs out there? Because a lot of the listeners are entrepreneurs, or anyone else in the industry in general.
Yeah, I love the circular economy. I love everything about it. I do Airbnb as a landlord, as a consumer. I buy everything pre-owned, my car, my clothes, my shoes, my bags. I've been vegan for 5 years. I think for me, I just think that if every single individual out there can make a bit of a difference in their daily life to help the planet, it is really a small part, but it's a big, big part to me. If we all get together collectively, it's a big part of the solution. And so I like that these brands out there are promoting marketplaces. Like, for example, H&M now has its own marketplace that you can sell your goods there. Frank and Oak is using recycled cotton. These are all really good initiatives, and I think they're awesome. You know, Adidas using used plastic bottles to make their shoes. I think it's okay. I think it's really awesome. But I think it's really asking ourselves how we consume and how we can consume differently and how we assess value to goods. I think that's really one of the really good solutions, because my concern with a lot of these recent initiatives, and I go back to the H&M marketplace idea that they developed, is that at the end of the day, if it's not going to make money for them and if it's going to be too complicated, they're just going to drop it, right? So how can we find a way as a society to make these big brands that really have a big impact on fast fashion or whatever it is, that they continue to invest? And, you know, the news that came out this morning that Patagonia was going to give the company to the planet. Awesome. Like, more of that. Like, it needs to be big, bold moves. H&M, and no offense to H&M, doing a marketplace for pre-owned apparel is, I think, for H&M as a company, is just not enough. We need to do more.
Well, it's a way for them to kind of greenwash, to just get people to get off their back. And I think the whole idea about really pushing pre-owned, it also shows the quality and the value. Because sometimes you could buy, I'll give an example, I won't name the brand, but there's a brand that makes like $200 t-shirts. I bought one. Actually, it was given to me. But then after putting it in the wash once, it started to dechiffonner, it started to de-thread. You know, and that's not good. So you can't even resell that or pre-own that. But usually when you buy something that's pre-owned, like, the quality is going to last and you're going to keep it longer, as opposed to something that is new and you can't judge how long you could keep it for, which is just worsening the environment so much. So that's very good advice, Fred. So, but that's all I have for this time. Mais c'était un plaisir. Merci encore. Thank you, Fred.
Grand plaisir. Merci, Ryan.
Merci d'avoir écouté Ryan's Rants and Raves. Suivez-nous sur Instagram at Ryan's Rants and Raves. Thank you for listening to Ryan's Rants and Raves. Follow us on Instagram at Ryan's Rants and Raves. À très bientôt.